Robin, and we're now on side two, continuing on the first day of the interview. Mm-hmm. So you were saying, I guess mm-hmm. it looks like your second year after you finished your internship, so sort of your fourth year working as a doctor, is mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, right.
That Dr. Nagai brought mm-hmm. you back to Tokyo University to do
yes.
research.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point you have your MD. How are you funded at this point?
So during the internship, university hospital can pay our salary. But after finishing internship, we have to get some money outside of the hospital. But anyway, I worked for some clinics in the somewhere in the Tokyo and get some money to pay for my bills. But I spent the rest of the time to take care of the patient in the university hospital and spend some time to do basic research. That's huge. MDs just finished the internship in Japan did the same way. So it's a little bit weird, but it's a tradition in the Japanese medical society.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, no, that makes sense. So then you're back at the university mm-hmm. and you're doing research again.
Mm-hmm.
When you came back, did you know you were going to pursue the PhD, or was that a decision
yes.
you made there?
How did yeah, you? Right. So, I need to, all MDs want to get PhD actually, so, but the it's sometimes difficult because MD to get PhD, MD have to spend significant amount of time to basic research, but it's usually very difficult when they are looking at the patient. But when you stay in the university, we can somehow do that because a lot of doctors there, and they can share their duties and make some time to focus on basic research for a while. So it is essential for MDs to stay in the university when if they want to get PhD. So I stayed in the university and spent a couple of years for basic research, but I cannot spend 100% of my time to research, maybe say 50% of my time to research and 50% time to looking at patients. But somehow I got some publications and combined them to a big article,
dissertation,
and applied to the committee, and my PhD was approved in 1991. So it took 6 years maybe after I graduated the medical school to get a PhD. But during that time, I spent maybe more than 50% of time for patient care. But it's not so bad for me, actually. So anyway, I got PhD in 1991.
I think you said before we had the tape on that because you had completed an MD, you basically... It was just the dissertation at that point.
Right.
You didn't have to go do another series of...
Right.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and can you talk a little bit about the research interests you had mm-hmm. at that point? Mm-hmm. You know, what you worked on with Dr. Nagai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dr. Nagai's main research interest was how smooth muscle cells in vessels change during the atherosclerosis or hypertension. So my research interest was also similar, and I wanted to know the mechanisms, how hypertension develops. So at that time, a new technology, transgenic mouse technology, has become available. So he and I wanted to introduce that transgenic mouse technology into his lab. So I went to the another laboratory to learn the transgenic mouse technology. So the institute I went was National Institute of Neuroscience in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I tried to make a transgenic mice that overexpress an ion channel called sodium proton exchanger. So because at the time the overexpression or activation of that ion channel might be related to blood pressure elevation. So I wanted to make a transgenic mice that overexpress that particular ion channel. Mm-hmm. And wanted to ask whether they develop hypertension. So I spent a couple of years to make transgenic mice and analyze it there. And as we expected, they developed hypertension when we load sodium to them.
So you developed mice models yourself?
Right.
So how long were you at the institute? Did you then go back to the lab and work on that?
Well, actually, we went both institutes. So I looked at patients in Tokyo University and I went to that institute, National Institute of Neuroscience, after I finished my duty there. So it's really tough. So I worked literally 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for several years. That was really tough for me, but it was really a good chance for me. So at the time, transgenic mouse technology not so popular. It was rather regarded as a high-tech technology. Of course, basic researcher can do that, but nobody thought that clinical researcher can do that, but it was good for me to get that technology, and we can get the expected result. But what was good for me was, I got some byproduct in that project, and that brought me here, actually, the side project. So it was really lucky for me. So when you make transgenic mice, you inject gene fragment into mouse egg, and the gene fragment get integrated into mouse genome. And people, of course, we expected that the integrated gene will be expressed and generate more protein and called some disease or phenotypes in the mouse. But it doesn't go always, it doesn't usually go like that. So that if you get, the gene you injected will be integrated in the mouse gene. But sometimes it's not expressed. It's just sitting there and do nothing. Mm-hmm. So, it's very common phenomenon when you do the transgenic mouse experiments. So let's say I made 30 independent transgenic mouse lines, but only 3 of them expressed the integrated transgene. So using those 3 lines, I found that the overexpression of the gene caused hypertension. But the rest of 27 strains has transgene in the genome, but the transgene did nothing, just sitting there. But only it's theoretically possible that the integration of the transgene could destroy the endogenous mouse gene at the integration site. And if the transgene accidentally integrated into one of the very important genes for the mouse, then the mouse may develop totally unexpected phenotype, not because of the expression of the transgene, but because of the disruption of the endogenous mouse gene. That phenomenon is called insertional mutation. Mm-hmm. So I just examined the rest of the 27 transgenic mouse lines that did not express the transgene, and found that one of the transgenic mice developed a disease similar to aging, human aging. So it's just an accident. So nobody can control where the transgene is integrated. So just what we can do is just inject the gene fragment into a mouse egg and let them integrate the transgene. So the transgene will be integrated randomly into the mouse genome. So, but it could accidentally hit the endogenous mouse gene and disrupt it. So actually this kind of phenomenon has been known for years, but it really depends on the luck. So if you get some interesting mutant, then we can pursue that, but we cannot do that on purpose, actually.
But at the time when you were first in the lab, from what I looked through your publications, mm-hmm. it looked like at that point you were still publishing on hypertension.
Yes, right.
And myocardial stuff. So you kind of pursued that. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Through right. first.
Right.
So at what point did you get the mutant mouse?
I noticed that I got mutant. Maybe it's about 1992. Two or three. So just after I got a PhD, I went to the National Institute of Neuroscience, and one year after, I got several lines of transgenic mice. So I noticed there's some very weird mutant there, maybe 92 or something like that.
I definitely want to come back to that, but mm. I'm curious because you were just describing your 14-hour mm. days. when did you meet your wife?
I think it was hard for her to, but anyway. But we have to do that because doing both clinical duties and basic research is too greedy. And I never do that again, but I knew that it won't continue forever, just for a couple of years. So otherwise I cannot get new technology or cannot learn.
Did you know your wife prior to that period? I know you weren't married yet, but did you know each other prior to that period?
No, I leave the house around 7 a.m. and be back 12 midnight, something like that. So, but at the time, many Japanese people are workaholics. It's not very unusual. It's pretty unusual, but not very unusual actually. So my wife is a rather conservative type of woman. So she knows that my father's generation worked very hard, very long to recover from the damage of the World War II. So many people in my generation looked at the patient. Our parents working very hard for a long time, so for us it's not very unusual, but still should be very hard. I don't know the younger generation in Japan can accept that. Anyway.
So did you two know each other before this really crazy period, and then?
Yes, I get to knew her when I was in the last year of the medical school. And I didn't get, we didn't get married during the internship because I knew it was really crazy period, as in the States, so internship is really crazy period. But after, so we waited to get married after, before I finished the internship. But yeah, she understands very well what I had to do in the particular period of my career. And her father is also hardworking, very typical Japanese. So I really appreciate in that point. But yeah, we didn't have so very difficult time to mm-hmm. get through that hectic period.
And she was an accountant, mm-hmm. I think you said.
Yes, she had a part-time job at the time, and she can spend some time in the outside of the house. And if she was housewife, she had been a housewife at the time, she might go mad. But she also had work, so both are pretty busy. So that was okay.
And did you two mm-hmm. live in, I mean, you must mm-hmm. lived in Tokyo too still at that point?
Yes, yes. So we never get apart. Yeah, all right. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at that point, then you go mm-hmm. back to basic research and mm-hmm. prepare a dissertation. Mm-hmm. So once you have a PhD, what mm-hmm. options does that open up? You would kind mm-hmm. of describe how,
yes.
you know, the way it trickiness
right.
of supporting yourself mm-hmm. as an MD mm-hmm. while doing the research. What
yeah.
options does getting
right,
a PhD open up?
Yeah, after getting PhD, there were essentially two options. So one is, of course, continue looking at patients and doing basic research to, at the same time, basically continuing the lifestyle. but of course, once you get PhD, you have to train the younger researchers, and there is some change in the role, but essentially you can go along with the same way. That's one choice. The another choice was, of course, you can choose to do completely different thing like I did. So you can go to the basic research area. But I think it's not very common, I think, because usually when you want to survive in the academic career, you want to, so you, once you drop out from the academic career, then it's, in Japan, it's very difficult to get back again. So I think United States is very unique because, actually in Japan, there are age is a very influential factor to determine his position. So usually, let's say the PhD in his 40s cannot, let's say, start from the instructor. Usually they expect to be associate professor level or something. So there's a very strict hierarchy in Japanese medical community.
Mm-hmm.
And postdocs, maybe at most 30s, assistant professor, associate professor in their 40s, full professor 50s. And usually it's not very common to work 50 years old postdoc under the supervision of 30 years old assistant professor.
Mm-hmm.
That couldn't happen in Japan. So then naturally, as you age, you have to get a certain position. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's very difficult for to change the career in the middle of the career, let's say, if you spend years to in the clinical doctor, and once he gets 40, then it's really difficult to change his career to basic research area, because 40s, people expect that they should be associate professor. He has to already has his own lab, so he cannot start from scratch like postdoc or student. So anyway, so when I got the PhD, I was 31. Mm-hmm. So I have to decide which way to go. So if you stay in the clinical department, yeah, that's one way. So, but if you want to go to basic research, I had to decide right now, right immediately. Mm-hmm. Because if I spend several years in the clinical department, I would be 35, 38. And at that age, maybe I cannot transfer to the basic research area, because I had to be assistant to associate professor at that time. So, mm-hmm. So I was 31. This was probably the last chance to change my career in Japan. I really wanted to work on that mutant I found. So the mutant looks like that developed aging like phenotypes because of the insertional mutation. So I really wanted to understand what gene was disrupted and what gene disruption caused the aging of phenotypes. Because if I can identify the gene disrupted in that particular mutant, that gene could be an aging suppressor gene, because if you disrupt it, animals get old very quickly. So if you can identify that gene, the function of that gene could suppressing aging. So that could be a huge discovery. So I decided to pursue that area. So I decided to spend my time and focus on the identification of the gene disrupted by the transgene integration. So I moved to the National Institute of Neuroscience, where I developed the transgenic mice and spent time to identify the gene.
So is this like a postdoc arrangement?
Yes, it's as a postdoctoral fellow.
Yes. So you're funded?
Yes, I was funded from NIH in Japan. So financially it was fine. I was paid and got some grant. So I was able to somehow survive for several years at least.
And you were just able to just do research at this point?
Yes. At that time I spend 100% of my time to basic research. Yeah, I knew that I couldn't do that. Actually, identifying the mutated gene in mouse genome is a very laborious work, so I knew that I couldn't do that without I couldn't do that doing clinical duties together. So I gave up the clinical duties and I left the Tokyo University and moved to the research institute.
Okay. So you were able to answer your original questions using the mice that had worked.
And right.
And is it fair to say you were most interested at this point in your strange mutant, or were you still working with those other ones?
I'm still working on that gene, actually. So it took me four or five years to identify the gene. And it was a new gene, and I named the gene Kloto, and after a Greek goddess who spins the thread of life. And anyway, I could identify the Kloto gene, and I got a good publication about Kloto.
You got a very good publication about
Kloto. Yeah, it was really lucky for me. And yeah, that paper actually brought me here.
Which I want to get to, definitely. Could you just maybe talk a little bit more about what it was like at the Institute in your postdoc? Were you working under somebody in a lab similar to here? Or were you how independent were you?
Mm-hmm. In terms of so my position was postdoctoral fellow.
Okay.
The reason why I first visited that institute was to learn transgenic mouse technology. So there was no particular scientific supervisor, actually. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to learn how to make transgenic mice. And I brought my project, to make transgenic mice that overexpress sodium proton exchange. So scientifically, I was totally independent. But financially, I have to borrow some money to get reagents necessary to do the research, or borrow some equipment or space to carry out the research. So I belong to molecular genetics department there, and but I received no salary from them, but just I provided my entire grant to them and get some reagent from the grant, and of course it's not enough to support everything I spend, so I borrowed some reagent, many equipment from them. So financially they contributed very much to my work. And of course, as a result, we shared the authorship with them. And, but I think I was really very happy to work with them. Yeah.
And could you describe just a little bit what the process is? I mean, you've disrupted a gene somewhere, and you're interested in it. What do you do?
So the what I actually did to isolate the gene.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's okay. So in the mouse genome, transgene is integrated. So I had to do was to identify the gene around the that exists around the integration site. So first thing I did was to isolate the genes around close to the integration site. It's easy to say, but difficult to do. Anyway, I can somehow obtain the genome sequence adjacent to the integration site.
Mm-hmm.
And next step is to compare this region to the original mouse genome, so and find out what is different between them. So sometimes insertional mutation occurs very frequently than we thought, because some people say that 5% or 10% of all transgenic mice shows some kind of phenotypes related to the insertional mutations. It's not very rare phenomenon, but people never pursue or people never try to identify the gene disrupted by the transgene integration, because integration of the transgene usually results in the severe destruction of chromosomal architecture. So usually it's very difficult to identify what gene was lost or what mutation was induced. So because of the huge destruction of the overall chromosomal architecture. So, but I was again lucky because transgene integration generated a very tiny deletion, simple deletion at the integration site, and the other part was almost intact. Mm-hmm. So I was not easy, but relatively easily identify where what was disrupted in the mutants. So anyway, and once we find out that the transgene integration produced a small deletion in the particular mouse chromosome, so it's like this. So there's a mouse genome, and there's a mutation of the transgene, and there's a small deletion here. So something is lost here. So maybe there might be a gene here, mm-hmm. and loss of this gene could cause the aging like phenotype. So I just try to identify there might be some gene around here. And I can find one gene very close to this deletion site. And yeah, actually it was later turned out to be a Kloto gene. Right, but the difficult thing is, okay, we know that the transgene was integrated here and this part is lost, that's fine. And you find the gene here, that's fine. But there might be several genes around here. And deletion might somehow influence the expression of other genes. And these genes could be the true cause of the aging like phenotype. We cannot exclude that possibility. So, but we cannot search everything around here. But anyway, I could identify one gene, and this gene expression was very much suppressed in the mutant. So that gene was a very strong candidate of the responsible gene of the aging-like phenotypes. So what I did was, okay, if that gene is indeed responsible for all the aging-like phenotypes in the mutant, we may be able to rescue that aging-like phenotypes when you bring the gene back to that mutant. So we did it, and indeed the aging-like phenotypes are completely rescued, so we were able to conclude that this gene I isolated was indeed responsible.
So you reintroduced the gene through a vector?
Yes,
or?
Right. So we had to do, it's actually a long way. So to identify a gene, it took maybe 2-3 years. And to prove that this gene is indeed responsible for the aging-like phenotypes, we had to make, again, transgenic mice that overexpress this gene and cross them back to mutant background and see whether the transgene can rescue the aging-like phenotype. It took another year or so. But yeah, it's a long study, but it was successful, so I was pretty happy to get this data.
So, at what point did you name the gene?
Mm-hmm.
When did you name the gene?
Well, when I isolated this gene, so it was maybe 96 or 95. And I spent another year to prove that this is indeed responsible. So my publication was 97.
Yep.
So maybe, 95 or something. Yeah, maybe.
Right. How did, the name it's kind of elegant. It makes sense. I'm just curious, was it something, did it just come to you? How did that happen?
Yeah. Actually, my ex-boss, the chief of the molecular genetics department in the institute, his name is Dr. Nabeshima, and he was not directly involved in the scientific part of this project, but he was very curious about what I'm doing. So he read some books on Greek myth, and he picked up this name. Yeah, actually, Kuroto sounds, for Japanese, Kuroto sounds a little bit like my name.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Especially, we cannot distinguish the sound of L and R. Japanese don't have the sound of R, so for Japanese, Kuroto and Kuro sounds pretty similar. That's why he picked up this name, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So up to that point, you'd had some pretty good success with publications, but this was obviously sort of a breakthrough. What point did you think this might be a Nature paper?
Yes. Yeah, actually, at that time, there was no example for a single gene mutation causing aging like phenotypes. Okay. So that was one thing, I think. And another thing is, actually, the identification of the gene caused by insertional mutation was pretty tough at the time. So technically, it was challenging. So that may be another reason. But it's because single gene may regulate aging. That was the recently it's not very new concept, but at that time I think it was pretty new. Some people argue against me because these mice develop many aging like phenotype, but they might simply sick and develop many diseases and may have nothing to do with aging. So that's a very reasonable criticism, I think. Actually, I spent the next 4 years to argue against that.
Okay. So, how did the writing process go for writing all that up? I mean, was that done within the with other people, or was that you? Or?
Yes, I wrote it down by myself, and. It's not very difficult. It was really straightforward study. I spend a lot of time, but it's very straightforward. I made mutant. Mutant showed these kind of phenotype. I identified the gene, and I rescued the aging phenotype. So that's pretty straightforward and simple logical sequence. So it was not difficult. And I also have it checked by the native speaker, but essentially, I wrote it by myself. And actually, after submission, Nature editorial office extensively revised my writing. And actually, original article I submitted in a series of three papers for phenotyping, and first article is. For describing the aging phenotype, the second paper, identification of the gene, and the third paper, rescue experiment. But Nature wants us to combine everything into one single big paper. So when I submitted first time, there are total of 27 figures and tables, but Nature asked us to suppress it to 6 figures and tables. But somehow we did that, and Nature likes the new style. So it took not very long time to be accepted. I was actually very worried about whether they can accept the concept that this is the model of aging. that was the point I thought. But fortunately, reviewers agreed with my opinion. So in technical part, I think there is no room to discuss. It's very straightforward. So, but the interpretation of the result, so regarding this mice as an aging model, could be a little bit challenging. But fortunately, the editors and reviewers can accept that interpretation. So,
yeah, mm-hmm. One point, and forgive me if I'm wrong, because mm-hmm. I'm not very technical, but mm-hmm. in reading up on your work before this, one point struck me as interesting is it looks like the mm-hmm. your mutant produced symptoms more similar to human aging than to mouse
right.
aging. Is
exactly,
that
right. So even if you keep the mice for a long time, they never develop phenotypes like Clotho mutant mice. Phenotypes that develop Clotho mutant mice are very similar to human aging right, phenotypes like atherosclerosis, osteoporosis, pulmonary emphysema, and many other features of human aging. So, it's not a natural acceleration of natural aging process of the mouse, but the it's a some mechanism might be related to human aging or human age-related disorders. Right, that's another very important point, I think. So it shouldn't be regarded as acceleration of mouse aging. It should be regarded as a model of human aging. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then mm-hmm. this fairly big paper comes out in Nature. Can you describe mm-hmm. what that was like for you in your career?
Oh, yes. It totally changed my life. So I didn't expect that Nature publication in Nature could cause such a big impact in every aspect of my career. So I just wanted to publish this finding very interesting, so maybe Nature may accept it. That's the only reason why I submitted my paper to Nature. Any paper would be fine. Science would be also great journal, or even they might reject us, but I'm pretty happy if I can put my data on any journal. That was what I thought at the time, but once it is published in Nature or just I'm surprised that the institute planned the press conference, and I never expected that. But they indeed did the press conference in the institute, and it's a good advertisement for the institute, and also a good advertisement for the grant program that supported me at the time. Mm-hmm. So, but it was a really interesting experience for me. But anyway, the good from a scientific point of view, I think that this paper was. I think it's really interesting paper. But. As you know, identification of the gene was not, of course, good enough to understand aging mechanisms. I thought it would be very important after I found the gene. So to identify the gene is one thing, but to identify its function is another thing. So what I have to do next is to identify the gene function of this gene, or function of this protein, gene product, Clotho protein. But I had no any clue to address that question at the time. So I was pretty happy I got published my paper in Nature, but at the same time, I feel a little bit anxiety because I had no clue to the next step at the time. But the reputation was really, impact was really high, so many people want to study Kyoto gene, but there was no clue to analyze Kyoto gene function at the time. So that's what I felt at the time.
And you had developed the mice, so I guess you would have been the source for everybody's inquiries. People would have come to you if they had questions about how to then try and study this.
Yeah, so other people want to use these mice for their own research interests. Like many people are working on, say, aging. So one might want to see what changes would be observed in the central nervous systems of people who are working on Alzheimer's disease are also, of course, interested in this kind of aging model. Or, you know, of course, every organ has some phenotypes. So, that's one way, actually. So phenotyping each disease observed in Kyoto mutant mice more precisely, more deeply, and understand why this happens, or to find out the mechanism. That's one way to go, actually. But I didn't want to go that way, because I would rather leave those projects to them, but rather I would like to focus on what the fundamental function of the Kyoto protein. That really challenging part, but maybe I should work on that.
Okay. Yeah. So just in looking at your CV, I noticed this is shortly before you came.
Can I give me 5 minutes?
Oh, sure.
I'll be back.
We'll turn this off. We're going to break and continue tomorrow.